Moolala is brought to you by the nonprofit credit counseling agency, Credit Canada. Human beings are very good at many, many, many things. We invented French fries, air travel, The Amazing Race Canada, the best show on television. But we are also bad at many things. Taking care of the planet, not so good at. Not eating too many French fries, we're not so good at that. And sometimes we're not so good at addressing financial issues. It is not always easy to spring into action and do the thing we need to do to get a handle on our money. Why is that? Why do we do that? Why is that such a universal predicament? Yuval Aberman is a behavioral science consultant and researcher based in Toronto. He has written on this very question, and he joins us now to talk about some of what he has learned. Hello there.
Hello there, Bruce. Great being here.
Why do we bury our head in the sands? Why do we turn a blind eye? Whatever analogy, metaphor, reference we want to make, our listeners are all nodding because they all know that they do this. We do. I do this. Why?
Right. It's really peculiar, isn't it? Like the fact that we are generally really motivated to improve our finances, but then we also do things that prevent us from improving our financial situation. So there are a number of biases or patterns of thinking that can lead us to be less than perfect when it comes to our financial matter. So a primary reason that we avoid personal financial matters is that thinking about money can be quite stressful, right? And something very interesting about our psychology is that when we encounter uncomfortable thoughts, there are certain coping mechanisms, strategies we can take to shield us from these uncomfortable thoughts. For example, one of them is what's termed the ostrich effect. So one way that we can deal with uncomfortable thoughts about money, about how finances are going to work out and things like that, is to pretend like they don't exist at all, right? As you've mentioned, this behavior is not limited to our finances. Like you might try to manage your weight, but then avoid stepping on a scale altogether. Or you might experience some scary health symptoms, but refuse to get tested for them, not wanting to hear about the uncomfortable thoughts. So similarly, we have this tendency when it comes to our finances that when things are actually not going so well, we tend to not realize it. Or there's a behavioral researchers identified that during market downturns, people tend to check their investment portfolios less, for example. And this was what was termed the ostrich effect, which stems from the mistaken belief that ostriches bury their heads in the sand when sensing danger.
Right. It's a great visual cue, whether it's accurate or not. Mm-hmm. How does this connect to our optimism or lack thereof?
Right. So one way that we can also deal with uncomfortable thoughts is to replace an uncomfortable thought with a more optimistic one, right? It's optimism bias is a fascinating cognitive tendency that we all have, the belief that things will turn out better than they might realistically be. So instead of pretending like the problem is not there, we might just present a rosier picture of what really is happening. So we can downplay our current financial situation, attributed to things that are beyond our control. We might say, oh, the economy is really bad. It's not that I'm making bad financial decisions. Or we might hear about the risks that are associated with a certain investment or other financial choices that people make, like, for example, living beyond our means. And we might tell to ourselves that, oh, it might be true to some other people, but I am not going to run into this problem. Mm-hmm. It's not relevant to me. Something will work out. And optimism is great often, you know, but it is often clouds our judgment and affects our financial choices.
I often refer to my own deluded optimism, like, you know, colds take care of themselves. Burning houses will just, I don't know, water will fall from the sky and put out the fire. There is a real difference in terms of how these biases play out for individuals. What drives that? What has this be unique to every individual on this foundation of what we understand about human beings universally?
First of all, I don't know what to say if there is something truly unique about this optimism. I think what, as you suggest, like great optimism can be really wonderful many times. But there's also, you know, we also know from the research that people who experience a lot of financial optimism are less likely, for example, to seek financial advice or see it as valuable.
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting.
Very interesting. But
interesting.
Yeah. Huh.
I would have thought for me, because I'm such an optimist, that I would have just done all the right things because the world always works out for me. But you're saying I may be an outlier or even more deluded than I admit to.
Both are possibilities. Now, yeah, I do also want to suggest, though, that in addition to the kind of the fact that we're saying that finance, thoughts of thinking about financial situation can be stressful, there are a lot of times where we are interested in improving our situation. So we do take in this information from the outside world. And yet, there's also the fact that we are not exactly wired to understand financial situation and information very well. So there's a lot of cognitive biases that happen that prevents us from even acknowledging the reality or making good decisions when we compare two different investment choices, for example.
You've written about something called the magical penny. Is it the magical penny? What's that?
Right. So I brought up, it's a classic example that I brought up in this piece that we discussed, that it's pretty much a very simple thought experiment. So imagine choosing between an immediate payment of $1 million or a penny that doubles daily for 30 days. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, the immediate.
Easy. $1 million today.
Right.
Easy. Done. No question.
Absolutely. The immediate million seems really appealing. And waiting for the penny to double is quite frustrating, right? Even though the latter would mean you would get $5 million in your bank account in a month.
What?
Right. So I'm sure that if I told you, do you want a $1 million now or $5 million in a month, you would choose $5 million. You can wait a month for that amount of money. And so this thought experiment demonstrates the wonders of compounding. I know many of your listeners are familiar. I know you've been talking about compounding.
Yeah.
But the point is that understanding the basic of compounding interest does not shield us from miscalculating how powerful compounding can be, right? People generally exhibit the exponential growth bias or the tendency to neglect compounding when considering financial options. So people might overlook the impact of interest rates on a shiny new credit card when they see a low annual fee or a very generous welcome bonus. It's common not to grasp how a few extra percentage points in annual interest can translate into a substantial financial burden over time. I think a lot of people see this now with the rising interest rate in the housing market, where a seemingly low percentage point increase does translate to hundreds of dollars, at least, for each mortgage payment for people.
So we have this level of awareness. We hide our head in the sand because money is stressful. Money is complicated. We have a number of biases, and we've given some examples here. I'm sure there are many more. What else does one do about this?
Yeah, well, I think one really important thing is first to acknowledge and be aware of all of these biases, because understanding that we do those things can really help us shield us from it in the future. So when we grasp the underlying reasons behind our behaviors, we gain insight into how to confront them. When we recognize the biases, like the ones we discussed, we can notice them next time that it happens. When you bury you find sand all over you because your head is in the sand, you might realize, hey, why am I tasting sand in my mouth?
Right. one other reference point that I think is helpful here is the marshmallow test, which, if it's what I think it is, one that we talked about with kids a lot around, delayed gratification. Am I referring to the correct test? And if so, how does it apply here?
Definitely. Right. So the marshmallow test is a really classic study from psychology. It was originally experimented with kids indeed. So kids would be going to a research lab and they would be offered a choice between eating a marshmallow immediately or waiting for a short period of time, after which they will receive two marshmallows as a reward. So you can see similarity between what we're saying with the magical penny, where there's this debate versus taking something now or in the future. But here, it's not really about understanding the complexities of compound interest. It's just stemming from our kind of inherent present bias, or when we focus on the immediate here and now, and less so about what might happen down the line. And what the marshmallow test done wonderfully is connecting between the findings of kids who came to the lab and had to make this choice and their later on outcome in life. So we really see drawing a line connecting between children's original kind of choice about delayed gratification and their long-term outcome later in life. We see that kids were able to delay gratification were later on having better long-term outcomes, including making better financial decisions. Mm.
I'm so glad they used a marshmallow and not a chocolate chip cookie, because if I was in that study, there is no way I would have waited for a millisecond on the chocolate chip cookie. Marshmallows, I think I could have waited. I don't know. Very insightful stuff. Yuval, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're more than welcome. It was a pleasure. Really glad
Yuval
to talk
Aberman
about
is a behavioral science consultant and researcher based in Toronto. He has written about this question of why is it that we are ostriches, or at least this notion, this myth about ostriches, and some real reasons about how our brain's designed.